Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 47, chapter 20. Pure devotional service, the process of knowledge and detachment. Sri Krishna continued, the residents of both heaven and hell desire human birth on the earth planet because human life facilitates the achievement of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead, whereas neither heavenly nor hellish bodies efficiently provide such opportunities. Right? Because one is there's so much suffering or so much enjoyment that you get distracted. So you don't really focus on Krishna consciousness, right? While the human form then is perfect because it's in between. You get, you know, how you say, a little bit of both, right? Like that. So, a human being who is wise should never desire promotion to heavenly planets or residence in hell. Should never desire it, maybe, I mean, out of duty.
In Denmark, there's a music festival called Copen Hell.
Copen Hell.
So people pay money, good money, to go to hell for a weekend, basically. So it's valid to put it in.
Okay, you should never. So one should never go to those. Indeed.
I've never been.
You have never been. You wouldn't know. Okay. Indeed, a human being should also never desire permanent residence on the earth. For by such absorption in the material body, one becomes foolishly negligent of one's actual self-interest. A wise person, knowing that although the material body is subject to death, it can still award the perfection of one's life, should not foolishly neglect to take advantage of this opportunity before death arrives. Footnote 10. Vladimir said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.1. So that's the specialness of the human form of life. That's why there's such strong discussions on why it shouldn't be wasted. Right? You shouldn't come up with other things because it can take you back to Godhead. The other things, you come up with philosophies, you do different things to stay in the material world. That's going to happen anyway. You come up with a philosophy or not, you'll stay. Like that. Right? So the only specialness that's there in the human form of life is not staying by going back to Godhead. Because right? Even going up to on the material platform of liberation, you will be back. Right? Like that. That's the part they don't tell you. Is that as they go out, they say, I'll be back. Yeah. But they're back. Without attachment, a bird gives up the tree in which his nest was constructed when the tree is cut down by cruel men who are like death personified, and thus the bird achieves happiness in another place. Mm-hmm. Knowing that one's duration, right, means they don't stay to the tree and chain themselves to the tree and do all that kind of stuff. They just go to another tree. You know. Knowing that one's duration of life is being similarly cut down by the passing of days and nights, one should be shaken by fear. In this way, giving up all material attachment and desire, one understands the Supreme Lord and achieves perfect peace. The human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically attained by the laws of nature, although it is a very rare achievement. It'll come anyway, but it's rare, but still. Use it properly. This human body can be compared to a perfectly constructed boat, having the spiritual master as the captain, and the instructions of the personality of Godhead as favorable winds impelling it on its course. Considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The destitute man, finding a touchstone, throws it in the mud. Right? He's giving that's the example. Right? The person with nothing, he finds a touchstone and he throws it in the mud. It's kind of like, that's foolish, because all the wealth he wants, he could get. So the same way as the human form of life can get everything that the soul requires. But instead, it gets tossed in the mud. The human body is the source of all desirable fruits. It is difficult to attain, since it is impossible to attain by millions of attempts. But it is easily attained, since it is attained by good fortune. Having attained the boat, which is by great luck skillfully made, which has a captain, when one surrenders to Guru, pushed by the favorable wind, by me, then, when I am served, one can cross the ocean of material existence. Some say this is the result for jnanis, since the topic is jnana. It is not suitable for the pure devotees, since their goal is not deliverance from material suffering. But others say that though the pure devotees do not strive for this, they also achieve it. Since it comes unsought, there is no fault for the devotees in attaining it. It comes anyway. So there's no problem in the devotees attaining this position. It's not their purpose, but that's the whole purpose. They're using the body in the service of the Lord under the direction of the spiritual master to please Krishna. And in the process, they cross over the material ocean. Right? But that's not the reason. They're not doing it to cross, because that's then the jnani. They're doing it to please Krishna. So that's the devotee. Right? Sri Krishna continued. A transcendentalist, having become disgusted and hopeless in all endeavors for material happiness, completely controls the senses and develops detachment. By spiritual practice, he should then mix the mind on the spiritual platform, fix the mind on the spiritual platform without deviation. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Having praised the human body, which allows practice of both jnana and bhakti, Krishna speaks of the actions necessary for persons qualified for jnana. Their initial state is described in 9.5 verses. The person is disgusted with material household life, disturbed by seeing its suffering, and becomes detached from the results of karma attained by karmis. Engaged in the yamas and niyamas of yoga, he meditates so his mind becomes immovable. Sri Krishna continued. Whenever the mind, being concentrated on the spiritual platform, is suddenly deviated from its spiritual position, one should carefully bring it back under the control of the self by following the prescribed means. Footnote 11. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Bhagavad Gita 6:26. Right, okay. By following the prescribed means. So it means remembering Krishna, absorbing yourself in some way. But you have to be aware. When it deviates, you're aware of that and then bring it back. Otherwise, if you're not aware, it gets deviated, you'll just go off in that direction. Right? So that's the idea, is one's aware. But that you're one's aware because one wants to be aware. So Krishna will allow you to be aware. Right? By Krishna's grace, you can become aware if you want to be aware. If you are aware of the need to be aware, then by Krishna's grace, you become aware. No? Okay. Sri Krishna continued. Whenever the mind being constant... Oh, no, he did that. One should never lose sight of the actual goal of mental activities, but rather conquering the life, air, and senses, and utilizing intelligence strengthened by the mode of goodness. One should bring the mind under control of the self. So that's why the lifestyle of goodness, it gives strength to the mind. Since you're dealing with material elements anyway, right? The mind is material. So then, and it's coming from the mode of goodness. Therefore, it's situated in goodness. It means the lifestyle and the environment you're in. Then it will just make it easier. So for the devotees, that's the only reason to engage the lifestyle and the mode of goodness, is because the mind is not controlled by bringing it to a platform where it is. Does that make sense? That's why we don't go against these principles, because these principles elevate one to goodness. You can say it's material, but so is any mundane upadhi. I'm trying to say is, oh, because of our backgrounds and, you know, we can't do these things. But then the background is passion and ignorance. So if you want to stay there, yeah, don't do anything about it. But if you want to elevate yourself, then you try to purify. You know, and so mode of goodness is simple. That's the nice thing about it. Right? Passion is the most complicated. Ignorance is also pretty simple. It's just backwards from goodness. Whatever goodness is, which is simple, you just turn that backwards, then that becomes ignorance. Right? Is that, you know, it's simple like that. You know, it's like you do activities in the day and you sleep at night. You know, that's goodness. Mode of ignorance is you do activities at night, you sleep in the day. Right? So it's still very straightforward. Right? The mode of passion is more difficult because you try to enjoy in the day and at night. So when do you sleep? You know, when do you know like that? Yeah.
Sunday.
Yes. In between. Yes. Yeah, they go to bed at Brahma Muhurta, right?
Many people misuse that Yanesha Sarvabhutanam, that verse of Bhagavad Gita. For a sage, what is?
Day, yes, it becomes night, yes. An expert horseman desiring to tame a headstrong horse first lets the horse have his way for a moment, and then, pulling the reins, gradually places the horse on the desired path. Because if you just there, they're right into that. If you try it that time, they won't. You just let them go, and then they'll just relax, because now they've got what they want. Now you pull them. So the mind wants to go there, you do, then you bring it. Does that make sense? So that connection to Krishna, wherever it wants to go, then you just bring it back to Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, that's why he said by the prescribed means. So this is the method. Because if you fight, then, you know, it's not going to be nice. Yes.
Well, it means like, no, if you say that you should not do this, you should not do this, it will be difficult. You do this, but in this particular way.
Yes, just like that. He wants to do, you know, you want to go somewhere. Okay, then go. But then now be Krishna conscious. Right? Because the point is being Krishna conscious. Okay, you want to be in those situations. Because we're thinking, I want to be in that situation to control and enjoy. But no, okay, if you want to be in those situations, then do. But be Krishna conscious. And so that's why then gradually you see is... Because if your interest in doing something is because the enjoyment you get from it, the sense gratification, if you're engaging in Krishna service, then that stops being your motive. Then it's just as you like serving Krishna. And then do you need to serve in this particular way? Right? Means... As we saw before, as if there's material desire, you have to follow the rules. That's the thing they go together. Is that you have material needs, then the rules governing those needs have to be followed. You have no needs, you have no rules. Right? So we just think, oh, you just do whatever you want. But no, you won't just do whatever you want. That's for someone who will just do whatever they want, they follow the rules. Right? It's that you'll serve Krishna. Right? Yes.
Well, some devotees, they are not satisfied with the simple explanation of how to control the mind,
yes,
which controls the senses.
Yes.
And then they, you know, dive into Patanjali Yoga Sutras and, you know, psychology, modern this, that.
Right. How is that working out for them?
Well, they're in the process.
Yeah.
And they preach it to others, and everybody's like jumping up and down, thinking, wow, this is the new way to do that.
Yeah.
So is that a good strategy?
No. The point is understand how to do, because they'll say all these different things, but the point is that they're taking that aspect from control of the mind, but what about pratyahara, pulling in the senses? They'll focus, you know, whatever it is on dhyana and all that. But pratyahara, pulling in the senses, are they going to do that if they're taking from yoga? And that's dependent on pranayama. which means stopping the breathing. So all those instructions are great if you've stopped your breathing. If you haven't, they may not work. You know what I'm saying? They'll say it works a little bit, but the point is we're talking about 24/7. So what's going to do that in an environment where the senses and the sense objects are engaging? So that means it has to be connected to Krishna. You have to see it on the transcendental platform. That's the only way it'll do. So they'll say it's simple. It's actually so much more sophisticated. It's so above their platform that they can't see it. So we have to have faith in that. And then by serving Krishna, then Krishna will reveal. Because the point is, if you're absorbed in Him, you don't need technique. You know, just like, let's say, okay, someone has a nature of a manager. Okay? So they're going to manage things. And they're going to, now they've taken up Krishna consciousness, they're going to manage for Krishna. Right? So now, they come to the point, now, they see right and wrong. They want to manage, they want to control, but they're doing it for Krishna, so there's great benefit. But then it comes to the point of what Krishna's talking about here, where one goes beyond the rules. It's not controlled by the rules anymore. Because as a manager, if you want to be a manager and be effective in control, you have to follow the rules. Otherwise, management won't work. You can't make up your own rules. You can't make up a rule, well, I'll just sit in my office and just do things on internet all day, and by that, the whole, you know, whatever it is, temple will go perfectly. Right? So, it doesn't. It means those who see with, how you say, equal vision, notice that it's not going very well. Like that. We may talk about, no, it's in the process, or this, or that, or whatever. So, someone who comes to the platform that they're just serving Krishna, then they're not following rules. They're just doing those things that at the moment are favorable to Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's subtle, but the point is so they're not following the rules of management. They're practicing what's favorable for Krishna. Right? And so therefore then, let us say, okay, in the management, then, if you're talking about someone who's a bigger manager, then they may want to establish kind of a sense of authority. Or depending upon, you know, who they're dealing with or the range, probably even a slight bit of wariness or even fear. Not a negative, but just, you know, or it's like one manager here used to say, they know all, see all. You know, because they could tell where the vibe was not good.
Yeah.
You know, it means we'll look at something. They could just tell by looking and the mood that's there. They could tell whether it's clean or not without even going over there, like that. So they could see when there's something going on down at that end, down at the Brahmachari Ashram. The mood's funny. So they'll just walk down there and walk in, and they're surprised. How did you know? Who told him? And no, he just catches the vibe. So, like that, then they had that fear that, you know, if they did anything wrong, he will know. You know, and so one might do things to establish these things, or one might put in some extra work to get some particular benefits, or, you know, you understand? That's there. That's good. Now, let's say you come to the platform where it's just about pleasing Krishna. You'll stop doing those things for those benefits. So if it still has a benefit that, yes, you go around and see and all that and encourage, but you won't have to try to instill that fear. You'll just come in and encourage them in Krishna consciousness. But things that, like, say, you get some particular benefit from and that, you may not do anymore. So you'll just naturally, it's not about the rules, because in the rules you have to do all those things. But here it's not about what's favorable for Krishna is done and what's not is just not done. But because it's favorable to Krishna, it'll always be pious. So they'll never do anything wrong, as Vishwanath Chakravarti pointed out, is that because they don't do anything wrong, they're not breaking any of the rules that you shouldn't do, they don't break those, so they don't go to hell. And whatever rules they do follow, they're not doing it for the material benefit, they're only doing it to please Krishna, therefore they don't go to the heavenly planets. So in this way, then they just go back to Godhead. Right? So it's a different approach to the concept of not following the rules and, you know, all these different things. But you can see it's very sophisticated. Simple, but sophisticated. Because we have this idea of if it's sophisticated, it's not simple. And if it's simple, it's not sophisticated. That's a non-Vedic concept. But actually, it's the more sophisticated your understanding, the more simpler it is. So, yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, it's interesting. Among all the people who teach yoga, there's one person who's very well known, the most famous, but by his perfection in that yoga, he began to appreciate the devotional service. His name is B.K.S. Iyengar.
Okay.
And what he teaches in his book about yoga is any asana, it has to be performed in a very cool way. But nowadays, whoever teaches yoga, yoga is more about aerobics than... So they will never come to any perfection.
Yeah, they can. They're always moving. Yeah, I saw that I'm not sure when it was, back in the 80s. One devotee who was very... a teacher in the school, you know, so that, you know, bona fide like this and that, and they came to teach the kids, and they were always teaching the asanas that were moving, and I was asking, but don't you know, you're supposed to sit and do these things and like that, and they said, yes, that's for adults, but for kids they can't pay attention, so they always move. So then in those days they taught actually the asanas to the adults, and the kids they would teach this kind of, you know, dynamic and no static moves. But it appears what you're saying is now even the adults can't pay it, you know, can't do it, so they're dealt with the same as Iyengar used to deal with kids, you know, 30 years ago.
Maybe the kids get used to it.
Yeah, and now the kids do this, do the static, right? Oh, no, the kids grew up. Yeah, so that's for them is yoga.
They've never moved forward.
Good point also.
Without that, like, no steadiness, then you'll never move to the next stage. What is the point?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I went to one of those classes in London, actually. A guy kind of pretending to be a bhakti yogi or something, but it was this vinyasa yoga thing that was kind of moving all the time. I don't think I've ever seen bigger egos than the people who went to that class. It was like...
Of yogis.
Yeah. And these are yoga teachers that go to this class. He's like famous.
Oh, okay.
In London, at least. And it was just like, are you going for the chakra cleansing in Bali this summer? No, I have to go to Budapest to get this, some course in some Ayurveda. And,
yeah,
you know,
each one trying to outdo the other.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like enormous.
Yeah, then you go, are you going to, what do you say, the chakra cleansing course in Bali? And then you look at them and go, which one?
Yeah. And then they freak out because...
I said, oh, you don't know? Oh, sorry. Excuse me. And then just meet them. What? Yeah, they'll be totally that.
Instant Google on
the phone. Yeah. Which one? Which chakra are you focusing on? Which part of the chakra? Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. Because it's just all... Because now it's accepted in the West. Before it wasn't. It was something you just kind of did, you know. So it kind of had a little bit more. But now it's like a prestigious thing. You know, it's like all these things. If you're organic because of, you know, some health thing, you're weird, or that's just what you grow, you know, there's something wrong with you. But now if it's because you're, you know, cutting edge and high society, now you're organic. Now that's...
Because it's not about being organic or yoga or anything.
No. It's because it's... It's probably most of the people of the world that kind of live off their own land are, you know, just there, that little place is organic. Mm-hmm. You know? But that's not prestigious, so... Yeah, it's a problem. So that's the whole point, is when the mind deviates from that, devotees will know. But like these materialists, they don't know it's deviant. In fact, they think it's getting better. The bewilderment is then where the excitement, they're getting the taste, they're getting... So it's a problem. So they're not an expert horseman. They're just, wherever the horse is running, they're going. There's a good chance that it's not a horse, it's a donkey. The one they took from the neighbor, right? Similarly, the yoga process is that by which one carefully observes the moments movements and desires of the mind and gradually brings them under full control. So you have to know what it is the mind does, what kind of mind, what kind of areas, where it likes to go. And then how to bring that into Krishna. Because, yes, you want to go into that area, fine, bring it to Krishna. You want to eat this food, fine, offer it to Krishna. You want to do, you know, whatever it is you want to do, bring it to Krishna. You make the connection, whether it's actual a physical connection or it's just an intellectual, you understand the connection, you know, from the philosophy. So, yeah. Then know what you're dealing with. Yes.
So Maharaj, the pure devotees, they can go directly from the beginning to just directly connecting to Krishna without undergoing the...
Yeah, they don't have... Spontaneous means you don't have the intellectual process in between. Spontaneous just means an opportunity is there to serve Krishna, you take it. Because you just want to please Krishna. But the path of jnana or karma is that you'll use the intellect in between to see how it connects. Because you want to do those activities for whatever benefit you get. Then you see how to connect that to Krishna. So the point is that's what you're doing. So it's the same thing. It's just on the advanced platform, it's simultaneous. But it's the same process. They're always bringing it to Krishna. Just they don't have any... There's no space in between. Cuts out the sound again. Slowly. Yeah. You know, it's just like, okay. It means the intellectual thing, okay, we can see that, you know, the senses shouldn't be controlled. Let's say someone, they like to go jogging. Okay. But then, why jog? They'll say, oh, it's good for health. And why good health? Right? Because why are the karmis having good health? So they can chant their rounds and do service for Krishna? No, for sense gratification. You know, they look good, this, that, the prestige, and all that. And then, you know, so if that's it, then you know that will come anyway. You know, then they like to go out, they like to wear their whole outfits, right? Because before, jogging doesn't require special stuff, because you're not running very fast, so you don't, but they all have the special shoes, the special this, special that, you know.
Two sticks,
you know, the what do you call it, the thing, you're listening, you know, the whole thing, and depending on what you're wearing, so when you jog by and they're jogging by, whoever's wearing the better stuff than the other one's checking out, you know, and things like that, and, you know, so it's all happening. And so when you get to the point where it's just about Krishna and that, okay, you keep maintaining your health so they can do your service, then you don't care. Then you can go out there in something that isn't so fancy and fashionable. And then, now when you go by, they'll go, hey, instead of all these tight and called, you know, just gray, drab, baggy, you know, is that the way, you know, what am I doing? You know? Then the next day you'll see everybody else out in the baggy stuff. Because right? Yeah. You don't care. Like that's the one who doesn't care wins. Right?
Charlie Chaplin, Robert.
Yeah, with the coattails. Yeah, exactly.
It's like Indians now, they like to run.
Yeah.
But the village one, Wallace, they do it on the highway. But the way they run and what they run in, it's no sometimes. But they have only the sports shoes. That's
yeah, the sports shoes.
Gumshoes, you know,
everything else is that. They have those far out shoes. You got to have the shoes. You're running. I always see a guest. Oh yeah, we're gonna do. I got to get my running shoes on. It's kind of like what? Okay, why not? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The path of giving regard to the mind, verse 19, is praised using an example. Controlling the mind by this path of fulfilling its expectations is the highest method. Like inspecting the inclinations of the mind of a horse that one desires to control, one inspects the inclination of one's heart. It is impossible to control the horse suddenly, simply by thinking that the horse should know one's intentions, right? Because sometimes that's said, no, but you should know, you're a devotee, and like that. No, but that's not the highest level. Like that. It is impossible to control the horse suddenly, okay? One should follow its movements carefully. That means you know what's happening. Similarly, one should follow the movements of the mind. Then you see what the mind wants, where it's going, and then you give, and then you engage it. And then with time, you'll start to see the difference. That is the engagement in Krishna's service that's nice. So therefore, if that engagement that you like to do is a nice activity for Krishna, you don't have to change it. Now you're doing it just because it pleases Krishna. But if you find that, that activity you do you do is not so important for Krishna as something better, then you'll shift to that. Or give it up, or whatever. Does that make sense? Or use it where it only needs to be used. Does that make sense? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that after slightly controlling the mind, the method of complete control of the mind should be used. This is explained in the next three verses. Right, so that first, how to initial start, then to control. Now he gives how to, they say, complete control. Right, okay. Sri Krishna continued. Until one's mind is fixed in spiritual satisfaction, one should analytically study the temporary nature of all material objects, whether cosmic, earthly, or atomic. Footnote 12. Vritti. Adi Daivika, Adi Bhautika, and Adi Atmika. Right, so the big, small, and the whatever's in the middle. Like that. One should constantly observe the creation, right, because bigger than that takes it out in the context. And when you go smaller than that, it also takes it out of its general context of our application. The middle one is then where you're applying it. Because then you have these other two to kind of balance that.
Yes.
Otherwise, you think it's very important, but it's the biggest. But no, the what do you get? Adi Daivik is the biggest. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. One should constantly observe the process of creation through the natural progressive function and process of annihilation through the regressive function. Right? So creation, how it naturally manifests, how it falls apart. Because that's how then things work. You have something from one, it progresses to the one way. So how does the destruction work? The opposite. Does that make sense? So that's it. You can see how the mind gets distracted. And so you just reverse that process to bring it back. So, yeah?
Huh. It's an interesting watch that few days ago, one devotee, he explains the nature of destruction, and most everybody, they think that the actual technique is to get the focus, but he says no, it's to get attraction. So he says we think destruction and opposite of it, it's a focus, but he said no, attraction, that's what really brings you to focus naturally.
Okay.
It's a very interesting concept.
Yeah, because attraction and destruction. Because you're only worried about destruction if there's attachment. And if there's no attachment, you're not worried about it. So the destruction actually breaks attachment. So, yeah, because that's why then the you see the sannyasis especially, but also Vanaprastha, he's starting to analyze that. And so you see how the material world, you know, those that you want to be with, you're not with. Those that you don't want to be with, you are with. You know? Like this. So that's just how it works. And all these different things, that's just the way the material world works. So by contemplating that, one gives up one's attachment. Like that. So, yeah. So, but here Krishna's pointing out, everybody can use it. But the idea is, at least if you haven't used it before, at the end of your life, at least by then you should start to use it. Not making new plans how you're going to, right, enjoy life and, you know, that around the world cruise or whatever it is. You know. Yeah? Well, shouldn't have brought up the world cruise. Well, it says, you know, that the mind wants to go there on the cruise, so but then you bring it back, so you just get on one of the local boats and go out of the jungle and then come back. You know, so, yeah.
Now they advertise, now Calcutta, we can go from here to Calcutta on the boat.
Oh, that
one.
Oh, our boat.
Yes.
Oh,
Friday. Now I want to watch everybody's going there now.
1,001 way.
Okay.
A long time.
It will take at least 5.5 hours.
For 500, you could get halfway. They'll drop you off.
Panihati, you have breakfast.
Panihati, but that's not all the way there.
they say the prasadam is on the boat.
On the boat.
But.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 5.5 hours.
It will take, because from Calcutta we came to Parihar, it took 2 hours. Sometimes the wind is opposite way, and it takes
longer. Oh, wow. Need to get those. Hey, you see them in Europe on the city rivers. They have these boats. They're super thin and super long, low, like that. They could. Huh?
Amsterdam.
Yeah, Amsterdam. You see them. I think also you see them in Budapest, no? On the river there. It's just, yeah. It's just, they can just go and don't get affected.
Oh, sometimes the bridges, they go up.
Oh, the bridges go also.
This concept called narrow boats in England. They used to use them for like coal and all sorts of industrial things. Now they're like residential and transport. And
okay. But those are the ones that they use between Cambridge and Oxford, right?
No, those are more like...
Those aren't narrow?
Well, they're very narrow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So you're saying narrow, not very narrow. No?
Well, it's not so much descriptive as more like a label you put on them. They're called narrow boats.
Oh, okay.
So it's a specific type of boat.
Okay.
No, just the fact that they were literally
narrow. Narrow. Okay, it's called a narrow boat. Even though now it's not narrow anymore, and they wonder, why do they call it narrow?
Exactly.
Okay. When a person is disgusted with the temporary illusory nature of this world and is thus detached from it, his mind, guided by the instructions of his spiritual master, considers again and again the nature of this world and eventually gives up the false identification with matter. Through the various... means what we were saying before, you have a conditioning, like we go back to the before. We're saying, okay, we have this manager. So he's identifying as a manager, and so he follows the rules of management, and he engages that in Krishna service. And so it becomes nice. But once, at some point, you give up the identification as a manager, because you're just servant of Krishna. Now, if that's a service you can do and this and that, you do. And if it's not, you're already absorbed in hearing and chanting and whatever it is, because you're... Does that make sense? So there's no rule, but we see if Arjuna, he wants to give it up. What does Krishna tell him? No, you have to follow it. Right? But we're saying here is that one goes beyond the rules, because one doesn't have to function that. One could just sit in here and chant all day. Right? But there's a need for that, then they'll do. But it's not that they have to follow the rules of manager because they're a manager, because they're not a manager anymore. They're the servant of Krishna. So, so they give up that, it actually gives up the false identification with matter. Because gross and subtle body are matter, so the identification with that. Right? So all the upadis, then at one point they're all given up. And so if there's a service connected with those elements, one performs them. But if not, one's not bound either by the modes of nature or by the, you know, the laws of Dharma, that one has to follow these things. Is that, yeah? Through the various disciplinary regulations and purificatory procedures of the yoga system, through logic and spiritual education, or through worship and adoration of me, one should constantly engage his mind in remembering the personality of Godhead, the goal of yoga. Right? So whatever you're doing, you should all be connected to Krishna. Right, so these various disciplinary regulations, purificatory procedures, yoga, right, you know, like that. Does that make sense? That doesn't necessarily mean hatha, because that's one of eight. Right, because we think of yoga, it just means hatha. You know, like that on a good day. Yeah. No other means should be employed for this purpose. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. By analysis of the elements from Mahatattva to earth, one should meditate on the creation from Prakriti to earth, and destruction from earth to Prakriti. It comes from there, it comes down to here, then here we are, and then it goes back the other way. Footnote 13. Riti. By analyzing material object, one loses one attraction for it, to it. By seeing only the cause, the Lord, and not the effect, matter, one is always in Krishna consciousness. Sri Krishna continued, if, because of momentary inattention, a yogi accidentally commits an abominable activity, Then by the very practice of yoga, he should burn to ashes the sinful reaction, without at any time employing any other procedure. Footnote 14. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated in his determination. Bhagavad Gita 9:30. Right, because there is no other process to remove all this. You have so many different things, but why are they there? The whole system of prayaschitta is for those who have material identity. Because they identify with that, then there's some reaction connected with that identity. But if you don't, then one gets distracted, one goes back to that position of non-distraction, of focusing on the Lord. Because that's the only thing. Because it's all Krishna. So it's connection to Krishna. That's what you're looking for. But to think that there's something else that would purify and not Krishna, then does that make sort of sense? Yeah. So that's material consciousness. So Krishna says, employing no other, without at any time employing something else. Not that, okay, we'll do this, then we'll go to that. No, you just directly apply Krishna consciousness. What will keep them focused?
So now here, Krishna is preaching mainly about the primary topics. No secondary.
That's all there is, because the primary talk is him. Everything's him. So what else is to discuss?
Yes. It's the illusion.
Yeah, so therefore that we have this concept of secondary, that's there because of our illusion that there's something separate from Krishna.
Yes.
You have direct things that are, the connection, then the indirect. So the Icha will be direct, and the Jnana and Kriya will be in support of. But it's still all Krishna. But we are thinking that Jnana and Kriya can be used separately from Krishna for our Icha, from our desire. That's where the problem comes in. Right? So since we see things externally, that externally gives happiness, therefore we see the process as external. And the devotional process has to be externally different from the non-devotional process. So that's the point. It'll be saying, oh, well, you're following that, it's too exotic, it's too like this. No, we have to be something that's more comfortable to the local people.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty is that, how do you say? We're thinking that the process is an external one. It already includes that whatever position you're in, engage that to Krishna, but then they should advance beyond that. But if you're saying don't use these sattvic things, then how is one going to advance beyond? So even you're applying the position, you're using it, approaching it from the mode of goodness and pure goodness. That's the point. The horse is going in that way. It goes that way, and then you bring it back. But they're saying, it's being said, no, the horse keeps going in that way, and we'll get to the same place, right? Jato mat tato pat. Any path gets you to wherever you want. Right? But then, as Vishwanath Chakravarti was pointing out, then if that was the case, then someone just thinks I'm a king, he would be one. So just because we think it's like that, that doesn't mean it is. Yes?
Regarding this prayaschitta, once one of the brahmacharis was walking on road, and there is one fellow who is coming, give me some money, I'll remove your ill fortune. In India, people says, I'll free you from your ill fortune. Give me some money. He said, I don't have any money. No, give at least 100 rupees. He said, I don't have 100 rupees. At least 10 rupees. He said, we are brahmacharis, we don't carry any money. What more ill fortune can come to you? Go away. You're already in the worst.
Yeah.
So somebody who's not into materialism, then there's no point.
Yeah, there's no point because they can't do it. Right? You don't have the money to do it. Right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Uddhava asked, if the person disgusted with karma is not qualified for karma yoga, if he commits sin by fate, how will he destroy that sin without resorting to the atonement through karma yoga? Right, because atonements are all in karma yoga. They're not in jnana yoga or in bhakti. It's only in karma. Right? If this jnani commits a sin, he destroys the sin by practice of jnana, yogena, alone. According to Sridhar Swami, this also indicates chanting the name of the Lord for the devotee. It is said, kechit, kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dun vanti kartsnyeya niharam iva bhaskara. Some persons who surrender to Krishna completely destroy sins by pure bhakti, just as the sun destroys fog. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.1.15. Swapara mulam bhajata priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hari paresha vikarma yach chot patitam kadanchit dunoti sarvam hridi sannivista. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord is very dear to the Lord. If such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Lord, having great powers, seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reaction to such sin. Right? So it's being situated in devotional service that's going to get rid of reactions. Not something else, because whatever else you're using, it anyway, the potency of it is Krishna. And since you're trying to get rid of the reaction for devotional service without using Krishna, how will that function? How will that be devotional service? So the point is it's only by the direct activities of surrender to Krishna that that's going to make it all work. So, yes?
You always argue this point, saying that this is very Brahminical approach.
Yeah.
But then some of us, we are not, on that level, we're not that advanced.
Fine, bring out the fingers.
Yeah, that's what they say. You should actually. That is working. That is a process that we appreciate. But then we should actually remove somebody from the position because they committed the crime.
But what happens if they deal with their kids bad? Do we have a way we can remove them from the position of being a parent to those kids? Is that okay?
Well, in many countries it is.
Yeah, but are these people saying that?
No.
So then. All it is that they don't accept the eternally authorized systems of prayaschitta, either in karma, jnana, or bhakti. And they want to make up their own on what they think is actual prayaschitta. So it has nothing to do with, oh, we're not qualified. I mean, it does have something to do with not qualified. It's because we're not qualified, we make up our own systems, our own sadhanas, our own value system. But in actuality is that there's already systems there. You either follow the path of karma, jnana, or bhakti. Those are the only elevating processes. Pranamoya and anamoya are not elevating. Right? So they can't have some other system. Just because they have to be removed from the position. And what does that do? How does that purify? What's the mechanics of it? What goes on here?
Well, removed from the position, say for example, somebody has a position in the society and then he gets, to perform humble service, goes on padayatra, does some...
But is that the prayaschitta that's being handed out now?
Well, usually they just remove from the position.
Yeah, they don't think about it. Like I mentioned, I think it was in London, then they removed the temple president. And then, because of, some, how you say, horrendous moral turpitude that was there from 30 years before that has already been dealt with like 10 times up to now, but, the wind was blowing this way and they had nothing else to do and, somebody got inspired and, like this. He added all up, like this. So they all got together, they removed him, and then they all felt, yes, we've done a fabulous job now the community can be inspired and this and that, and they all walked out of the room and then someone went, psst, we don't have a temple president. Who's going to manage this place? It's kind of like, oh. All right, we'll have another meeting for that. So whatever it is. So it's... That's the position, is that we think that by removing somebody from a position, we've actually done some service. But we haven't actually done any service. Because it has to be, how is that going to benefit? And they'll say, oh, because the public can't accept their position. But then, who's training the public? Who's responsible for the public? We don't mind them giving donations, we don't mind telling them what to do, but we won't take responsibility.
So it's always in the negative.
It's always in the negative. Removed. It's always just remove. Because that's easy. Again, it goes in line with the bureaucratic.
Break down, destroy, remove.
Yeah, it's just destructive. It's not a positive thing. Because the point is, how is that positive for them or the community? Because now all it is the community looks at things more in right and wrong and not as far as devotional service. So how is it going to be within, as Krishna is saying here, within karma, jnana, or yoga? Because where does it say you have to remove from a position? You know what I'm saying? We do that. But where does it say? Where's the authority? We see Prabhupada would sometimes take somebody with him for some time, like some months, and get in a good association. And then he would put him back in the same position. But we'll remove somebody and make a decree they can never be in that position. But Prabhupada would always put them back. So it's not about prayaschitta. It's about appearing that you're doing something when you're doing absolutely nothing. Because then when it comes down to that, then all in truth and this, before people would talk about their faults. Now if you talk about it, it's on the internet. So that means there's less truth than before. So the honest person, he lets you know, and then from that, then it turns into a whole thing. You know, so there's no help. It's not a matter of helping the individual. So it's impersonal. Though it's presented that we're doing something for the people, it's very personal. Is it?
Yeah.
So the difficulty comes is that it won't advance Krishna consciousness because the individual won't become Krishna conscious, right? The group that made the decision won't be Krishna conscious, and the group that they're worried about will be upset by it, or the public, or whatever it is, they won't be Krishna conscious. So in what way is this a benefit for Krishna? Is it it's just, oh, only people without any fault can do this service, then why is it called sadhana bhakti, and why is it purifying the heart? Then we should put out a thing that only pure devotees can join this movement and take position. Like that. It's a hospital. But we're making a rule, if somebody is sick, then, you know, we kick them out of the hospital. Or we kick them out of the... Right? It doesn't make sense. So even if we say, okay, send them on padyatra and that, yeah, and then after 6 months, then what? Will they come back and do that? If they're a manager, then their nature is to manage, so they have to manage for Krishna. Of course, if, you know, does that make sense? Because otherwise, how is it mechanically going to work? Where's the benefit? Because otherwise, then people are doing something wrong. They will always hide that they're doing something wrong. Because you can't tell anybody. Because somehow or another, there's this philosophy also, another made up, that, you know, somebody who's in an official position, all the devotees have the right to know because they're their leader. Any defect. But how does that work? Because if that's there, then that leader, because he's taking care of you and taking on karma, he has the right to know everything about you. And that's not going to be agreed to. So we're not dealing with the balanced philosophy. Remember, equilibrium or whatever it is, meant that the mind is fixed on Krishna. So because it's not on Krishna, therefore the whole thing is very much out of balance. So if we try to use systems other than bhakti, then we have karma and jnana. And then the technical points, that's where they say, oh, we're not qualified. So that leaves only karma. And then karma, then it's mana. And then according to mana, if you do a prayaschitta, once the prayaschitta over, no one should bring it up. Right? Let's say, okay, he did that 6 months, he goes out in padyatra. When he comes back, no one should mention it. And if they do, they take on that sin. It's considered sinful. But like I said, that one temple president, that's about like the 10th or 20th time he'd been on trial, like that. So just that means the whole thing about it is just sinful, because each time they do a prayaschitta, and then they complain.
That makes them keep complaining because they take on so much.
Yeah, that's the problem. You start the process, then you take on that bad reactions, then you become more contaminated, so then the consciousness becomes, and so it's just a downward spiral. That's why we just stick to bhakti. And karma and jnana, how much it supports what we're doing, we use. Because otherwise, we don't have the qualification for other things. You know? Especially for making up our own systems. That we're really unqualified for. You know. Popular. But that doesn't mean it's right. son. Yes.
There's a psychologist who had investigated or made a study of communists and found that it was not sympathy with the little people, it was resentment to those who were successful and in position.
Yes.
And the thing with this little people is just the excuse they make.
It sounds good, because if you say the people, then immediately everybody...
Who's going to disagree with
Yeah, that? You know, oh, everybody should be nice, or whatever, you bring a good quality. You can't, because if you're opposing it, then you're opposing the good quality.
Exactly.
When it's nothing about it, it's just they resent authority. That's all. So all these things you see, it's about the Vedic authority, and about anyone in position of authority. Right? Now, let us say... the member of the community, grihastha, you know, family person, job, money, whatever it is, and he does some kind of crazy nonsense. People, you know, a little bit this and that, but, you know, it's that he's one of us, so therefore, if he wants to come to the temple and that, oh, you have to be compassionate and kind and this and that, and why don't be so fanatic, you know, we're devotees and all that, but if it comes to anyone of the position of authority, then that doesn't apply at all. So it's like you're saying, it's the issues with authority, not that you care about the people. Because you always see is when the beneficiaries of the benefit that the people will get is always the benefit that that person who's saying that philosophy wants. Does that make sense? Yeah. Are we good on that, or...
Yeah, just to clarify, if, say, for example, somebody practices, you know, karma mishra bhakti.
Right.
And it's a lot of karma in there.
Right.
So can we apply both processes?
You apply what's going to work for them, but the point is unless there's a connection to devotional service and association of devotees, what benefit will it have? See, that's why it has to be done by those who are more mature. The problem is when karma mishra bhakti is applied on karma mishra bhakti. The point is then you have to use the Veda. Because only the Veda knows what's what and what degree of heaviness something is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so let's say there's an illicit connection between two equals. Right? Or there's an illicit connection between those who are not equals. Let's say 3 degrees of difference. So the Vedas will make a big difference in that. We'll just look at that as it's just illicit sex. That's it. We don't make any distinction between the quality of it. You know what I'm saying? What's consensual, what's not, what's this, that. There's all these rules that Manu gets into. If you're into karma has rules. You know what I'm saying? Just sitting around at a public place and sitting and goofing and laughing with the women in Manu is considered adultery. So if we want to point fingers and quote, then yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, let's do this, you know. So that's the thing, is that it's, because where is that going? What's it for? Why is it be going on? You know, like I said, at least in the first world Western kind of concept, maybe broader than that, that married person, they can flirt as long as nothing happens. They don't take it seriously and do anything. But when you're at a gathering, a party, and then they say all kinds, it's fine. As long as after the party you go home with your partner, and while you were there at the party, then there were no rooms being used for things that shouldn't have been going on. You know?
Yeah.
So that's it. But in the Vedic, it won't allow that. Because otherwise, then it gets... But now, as devotees, coming from those backgrounds, if they apply that rule, that is the rule of the Mlechas and Yavanas, so they have to follow it. If they break it, then there's a problem. If they don't break it, okay, it works for them, but they shouldn't think this works for everybody. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's we have our own standards. Fine, but don't apply them against devotional service. You know what I'm saying? And it's not really against, so because in there, we can also say, yes, when you drop it down amongst the Shudras, then it doesn't have as much of an effect, Shudras among Shudras. And when you drop it below Shudras, then it's just, you know, then it's not much consequence at all. So even by Shastra, we can adjust that. You know, the thing what I was saying about the flirting and all that. But the point is you have to know where it falls. Because like Krishna's saying, you should know the mentality, you should follow how the mind works, what it does, what your nature is, what you have to do. Follow how much. Okay, you have to control, you have to manage. How much? How? In what ways? What's the purpose? Why are you doing this? Because like for many, where it would be, it appears they're a manager, but they're only managing because they don't like authority. And they can't tolerate anybody else being an authority over them. So they want to be the authority, therefore they take up the management, but they're not a manager. So when they become self-realized, they'll understand is I don't need to manage because I'm not one. My conditioning's not one. So they'll just go on, you know, do other things that they can do nicely for Krishna. But someone who is a manager, that's what they will continue to do until it's not necessary. The young guys are doing it, so you move on. Is that work?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.